Welcome along to Under Construction. I'm Donal Cullen, and I am delighted to welcome you back for a new season of our Under Construction podcast. A little later in the podcast, we are going to be with our Supplier's Corner, and that's Crown Paints today. But we are in the presence of greatness. Limerick is famous for producing some of our finest actors, some of our greatest musicians, the odd decent rugby player, but nothing has lifted the parish, the county, like its hurlers. And we're delighted to be joined by three of them today. Tom, Seamus and Shane, thank you so much for joining us today. And Tom, I'll come to you first. Seeing you outside, still churning away with your prep and stuff like that. Is there any bit of enjoyment for you? Of course, four in a row now at the moment, but it's still shoulder to the wheel in terms of preparation.
Yeah, no. You know, it's that time of year again, as you say, where we're getting back into it. But yeah, look, we got to enjoy the off season, had plenty of downtime and enjoyed that. And, you know, it only reinvigorates you to want to go again. So yeah, that enjoyment is definitely there and really, really looking forward to the year ahead.
Seamus, we were laughing at it though. You don't miss it, do you? That moment of constantly being on.
Yeah, listen, while Tom was eating oats, I was eating pastries. So like that's the way it was. That's the way it is. Like the you'll always miss, and then fellas will step away, and you know yourself. The dressing room is the thing you miss the most. The lads is the number one thing that I hated to let go of. But flip it. Being at home on a Tuesday evening and having nowhere to go was grand. It was actually lovely.
Exactly.
It was like, I was twiddling my, what do I do with myself?
Yeah.
So, you know,
Love Island.
There's the rosary.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was great crack. No, yeah. So like you give up something, you get something else.
Yeah.
I have a different vantage point now, and I love watching this man do what he does.
Are you at that point with it, Seamus? Because just for myself personally, I was a bit, I struggled for a while the first 2 years because you kind of still think I could be out there. You see an awful lot of your lads out there, a bit envious.
I was there quick, Gene.
Yeah.
I was there quick after the All-Ireland 18. I trained like a demon for 2 weeks after the All-Ireland 18. I was like, I'm going to make my place back on that team, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be ready for this. And I was actually in great shape October 2018, and then I realized, no, it's time to go. Like I had twins born in 2018. I had three kids. You know, a job, a lot of things going on that needed me more than the Limerick hurling team. So, no, I moved on real quick because my need was, I wasn't providing like you were. It was a passion that I was feeding, and it just, the time ran out on that for me. So like, I moved on very quick. I took my daughter to the Munster final the following year, and it was flipping, you know.
Wow.
It was quids in, like it was a different vantage point, different experience, loved it.
Yeah. Shane, you're out, but still in, managing and coaching. You're with the minors, is that right? And still doing a bit with the punditry. So how are you transitioning away from the game?
Yeah, probably a small bit harder for me, in the sense that like Seamus went out on his own terms. I didn't, you know, and you know, I was only still 27, so I would have maybe thought it a bit more left to give. But the only thing I'd say, and what made it easier for me, is that, you know, growing up in Limerick, you don't dream of winning 3, 4 and hopefully 5 All-Irelands or so, or whatever it's going to be. Like, I dreamed of winning 1, and that dream became a reality, which I didn't ever think was going to happen. And especially when we started, you know, when I joined with Seamus in 2012 and so on, was like, you were maybe didn't get out of Munster, be knocked out in qualifiers. So, you know, what it is and was, you know, hard. What made it easier for me is that, you know, I never wanted to win, you know, numerous All-Irelands. I was just living in an era now, I was living in an era where if you got one, you take your hand off. And even the kids now, like if you look at a 5-year-old kid now, they don't know different than Limerick winning. So now they're going up and they're saying, well, they want to get 4 or 5. It's just, it depends what era you kind of grow up in. And yeah, listen, and the other side of it too is gone into the media work, obviously, and doing the piece with RT. You know, I do enjoy it, but conscious that I'm still, you know, some of my best friends are on the panel as well. So it's only, I suppose, when they move on, it might become, you know, I'm conscious, I suppose, of what I said. But you still have a job to do as well.
Yeah, agreed. How do you manage that, though? We might chat about it, because I put something in place for me that I just think a bit helpful. I would say nothing on TV that I wouldn't say in a dressing room or in a review meeting. You know what I mean? I'd need to be able to stand over it, and I'd need to know that, yeah, I'd be okay with saying that to Tom, because I'd say it directly to his eyes.
Well, I think once you're factual, nobody can disagree with you. You know, sometimes you might be opinionated on something and it's your opinion versus my opinion. But if you're dealing with something and it's factual, well, then no one can disagree with you. And at the end of the day, let's call a spade a spade. If you're getting paid to do something, you got to do you got to do a right job or a proper job, and whatever consequences that has, you have, you just have to deal with it. And that's, people might be afraid to say it, like, you know, you're getting paid from Marty, you're getting paid from different pieces, you have to do your job, and I have to do my job as well. It's what's put bread on the table. So but I listen, I'd like to think that I am fair, no different to what probably most people think. The one thing that annoys me a lot, I suppose, is and they're out there, you know, people probably know a few of them, is the lads that are controversial for the sake of it.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them. I'll just call it as I see
when you think your opinion, like when you think there's more weight in your opinion there is, that's the trap. Like,
yeah.
I think that's when you're given a mic, right, in any walk of life, I agree with Shane. Like, once you're given an opinion that you fully believe in for the sake of it's, I always stick to gameplay. I love analysis. I love actually analyzing the game, how they did what they did, why they did what they did. Yeah, the shortcomings are there. Cool, grand, fine. But like, that's what I'm interested in. Like,
yeah.
I think that's the trap. If you don't fall into the trap of thinking that your opinion is far more important than it is, I think
you're fine. Of course. But I can see both sides of it now, because when you sit down and you haven't, especially in your game, lads, like honestly, trying to understand the minutiae of it. Like rugby, everyone says it's really confusing, but in the end, it's just 30 lads.
That's because you were professional for 15 years.
Like, I have no idea what's going on. And the big thing in your game at the moment, Jim, is the manipulation of space, isn't it?
This is the king here. Like, so like, we were talking just earlier on, really, about I get excited when I see space because I know something's going to happen.
Mm.
Like, and I love that because I'm now from a vantage point where I'm like, that space didn't just appear. Something happened to create the space. Someone has done something. So when I started, it was 06, right? Space didn't exist. You played the five lines in the field and you gave it hell.
Yeah.
But Henry Shefflin, you wander. And he's drift. And he basically said, listen, someone's going to follow me and then there's going to be space. And if they don't follow me, I'm getting the ball.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, people were like, oh, I can't put my finger on what Henry's doing. He's wandering, lads. He's going for a walk. Like,
yeah.
That's exactly what he was doing. It was as simple as that. But I used to get excited about that when I see, oh no, Martin Comfort is in that space and he's going to destroy whoever he's on.
But I love watching sport like that and then hearing your insight to it, because there's always a selfless player, isn't there? There's always someone that he doesn't get any attention. You know, I just go back to our kind of Munster days and you'd look at someone like Gerry Flannery but everyone would want to chat about key marquee players, but you're there, look at how small he makes the pitch for everyone else.
I think externally then players mightn't get enough credit, but I know internally where it matters most, are there the most amount of weight is probably put on them players, and it's the most amount of gratitude that's given to that player, and them selfless players, as I said, internally are the players that's why they're there. They're very important people in the dressing room.
Yeah, Tom, it's amazing to hear Shane saying something like that. You know, to win one All-Ireland is the goal. And here you are, you know what I mean, four in a row going into another season. The mind shift change in that for you to kind of think, no, this is, we're going to make a dynasty here. You know what I mean? We're going to be remembered forever or do you break it down even smaller than that? What goes before? Do you carry it with you or do you?
To be honest, you're not really thinking that way at all. As I said, you're kind of thinking it a year ahead. Like it's that time to get going again and you're starting at base again. That's the way I'd view it. And I know it's the way the lads would view it as well. You know, and it's just going out each day, you know, to get better. And when you reach that level, you want to get better again. And it's just, I suppose, that constant hunger that, you know, that better is temporary and you just want to keep on improving. If they view it as a level playing field again, like, you know, Munster, it was last day in the round robin series, we got out of Munster this year, do you know.
But just on that, Tom, something comes out of the ground then in those moments. Like, we'll call it experience. There's an X factor to it as well. But there's that ability of knowing you've done it and never, in the pressure moments, you know that you can call on something because you've done it before.
Yeah, no. And it's definitely good to, you know, have, I suppose, those experiences behind you and things like that. But at the same time, there is going to be a day where it doesn't go your way. You know, we all thought that with the, you know, the Dublin football team, which is the greatest probably team in the GA has ever seen, you know, and it's like, when will they be stopped? But like, it only takes one day and that day comes and it all, and you know, it's gone then. So you really do like have to just enjoy it while it's going on. But you know, you got to work hard in the moment and, you know, it's another year ahead that's going to be a tough year. but we just have to make sure that we're ready for it.
I think what Limerick are very good at too, Donnacha, is that, like, you know, there's going to be much talk, you know, as there's a lot already, and we're only in January about five in a row, you know.
Yeah.
And we were just talking, you know, before about it. And the one thing Limerick, and maybe I won't say Limerick, John and his management team are really, really good at, because it was there when I was there as well, is they don't run away from this, what's in front of your face. So they would say, yeah, this is the year for five in a row. Absolutely. If we win this, it will be five in a row. But what gets us there? Right, is it, will talking about get us there? Absolutely not. And then it's just parked, and right, now we know what we can do or what we have done. We got to go after that even more. You know, they won't, like, you see any interviews that will happen this year, I guarantee you, over the months ahead, when five in a row is trying at Tom or trying at John or anybody else, they won't run away from it. It's there, everybody knows it's there, and they've just become very, very good at managing the situations that are there. Is it any different to two in a row, three in a row, four in a row? I think if you go back to Kilkenny's time in 2010, where there was whatever 25,000 people at their last training session before they played Tipperary, that's not going to happen. So even experience of hearing stuff like that in previous times will help going forward. But I just think it's very mature, I suppose, out of the group. And John would have done that, as I said, in my time when we wouldn't have had a whole pile of success. So yeah, they won't run away from what's in front of them.
Seamus, is that a maturity even of the whole game now? I'm pushing on, like grabbing the nettle a little bit there to kind of go, yeah, we embrace that. You know, it's going to be the greatest challenge ever, but we love it.
But this is a wider conversation. Like, this is the, like, you're talking about an Irish psyche, aren't you, really? Like, when you're talking about the Irish rugby team going to the Rugby World Cup as front runners, world number ones, like, are we comfortable as an Irish people with expectation and with the burden of favouritism?
Yeah.
Probably not, I would say. Typically.
I think, though, in these moments, I think we're getting better.
But I would agree with you. So, like, in Limerick, it was very much a relishing the underdog. Like, in 07, we got to the All-Ireland final as underdogs. And we loved it. We loved the role of it. Richie Bennis was our manager and a fabulous leader and charismatic and everything that. 08 was a disaster. Like, because we had expectation. So, like, that is built and that is kind of formed by culture. And I would say that's exactly what Shane is talking about.
Yeah.
The culture and the leadership in that team is second to none. It's fantastic. But the reserves that the lads call on are formed from habit, ritual, things that are done over and over again that just become second nature, and you trust the guys around you, you trust yourself, and you trust the process. And yet you acknowledge these are the things ahead of us. Yeah, there's an opportunity there for history. But, you know, the process is more important than the journey is more important to the destination. And I think when you focus on that, that's how greatness, and that's how what the great teams do, is that this is normal to us.
Yeah. And you're right, Shane. It comes from leadership. But just from kind of the foot soldier side of it, that process, Tom, you might give us an insight into, like, I don't know how you do it.
You have two chances of getting an insight to the process. Yeah.
I don't mind that either. Yeah. But just, Tom, just give us like a rundown of your week. Like, obviously juggling work as well on top of it, and the demands on you, and, you know, there must be sacrifices. There must be something that does fall short because you have to give the game you love so much.
Yeah, you do. You used to, I suppose, since a young age, like, you know, you put in a lot of hours. And then, yeah, as you go on, I suppose playing senior inter-county does involve a lot of time. You know, you're out five times a week. So there is sacrifices, you know, of your time and your commitment towards other things, whether it's, you know, attending things at a weekend or, you know, weddings and things like that that are only natural for a person in their 20s to go to. You know, you have to maybe not go to them, or, you know, you're going to them and not being able to indulge fully in the day that it is. But to be honest, I had this conversation with a lot of people, and, like, to me, it's not really a sacrifice, you know, with other players and talking to it. You know, this is something that we choose to do and that what we've wanted to do. So you just view it as, you know, that's the way you want to live your life. It's not really a sacrifice if you're doing it and enjoying it. I'd be more conscious of the sacrifices maybe the people around me make, to be honest. You know, my girlfriend Elaine, like, she didn't choose this life for me.
Yeah.
She would, you know, would love to be maybe off traveling, you know, or would like that I'd be able to go to weddings with her, or, you know, there's a christening at the weekend I won't be going to. You know, it's things like that, and she makes those sacrifices a lot of the time, you know, for me to chase what I want to chase. And, you know, and it's people around you from a young age, you know, whether it's your mother and father hopping into a car to drive you while you didn't realise it at the time, you only realise as you go on, you know, they sacrifice their time, whether it's, you know, driving me out to Rackheel to play with Limerick or train with Limerick during the week at 14, 15, you know, and they're sitting in a car for an hour and a half. So, you know, things like this could, they didn't know it might happen, but, you know, they were letting you try and see if it did happen.
Yeah, I always found that the best bit, though, by winning and leaving them have a moment, leave them enjoy it.
You definitely always feel like you're, yeah, giving back to them a small bit, 100%.
Yeah, and just on that, the other side of it as well, though, I always found they took the criticism and the dips a bit deeper than I did, or than you probably do. You're hardened, you're around a group, people come at you, you're used to it, but they...
Yeah.
Try sitting beside a fella, right, in a stand who has an opinion, right, who has a very strong opinion about your very close, like, so
yeah.
your wife, yeah, my wife, sitting in the stands, listening to... That fella's useless. That fella, like, take him off. They put up with that. Like, so Tom hit the nail on the head. Like, the sacrifice isn't yours. It's, but like, you know, you get to live a dream. And especially like, so we were talking about in the amateur sport, you know, it is a dream. Like, it's a passion you're living. It's not a livelihood. Yeah. Because you have to choose to do this and you have to invest to do it. So, you know, you're the one that lives the dream. And then the people that are with you, you know, live it vicariously through you. But they're paying for it.
Donica, you're talking about the processes of Limerick hurling. Could you give us an insight into the process of Waterford hurling?
Yeah. I knew it would get flipped at some point. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, here we're on it. No. We're all saying nothing, lads. We're all saying nothing. Yeah. But I do find it interesting. One thing I'll say about being around the Waterford lads, I cannot believe the commitment levels. People have no idea. They really don't. It just in terms of, like, Tom, I know we're joking about you eating out before it, but like the windows to make sure you're fueled, the other things that are going on in your life, be it studies, like, lads, I'll be honest with you, being a professional player is so much easier. And I personally feel that I think the joy is in, I actually think we have to protect hurling and football from it going away from that, because I was lucky enough to be at the All-Ireland final against Galway where Limerick won, and I can promise you, with the exception maybe of a few games for me, that Munster-Glasgow game the day after Anthony Foley, but you know when you feel something, you feel emotion, you feel an outpouring, there's something that connects between the pitch and the supporters. I've never come across anything like it that day with the Galway game.
Yeah, it was probably because, you know, It was 45 years, wasn't it? You know, yeah, before the last time we won it. And it was amazing. There's one fella in our local club in the Pearcy, you know, and he was he's from Wexford, you know, and he was told to say, you know, before 2018 that he could never understand why Limerick was, you know, a hurling county, that it was Limerick and Dublin have the same amount of All-Ireland the last, right, 70 or 80 years, like, you know, but yet Limerick is still mad into hurling and Dublin, you know, yeah, are getting there now, obviously, again, they used to be football, but it was probably got to do with that. It was so long and there's just so much passion for it down there. And no matter whatever happens in any sport or whatever you do, like, if you look at the homecomings, you know, the scenes after, you know, the second, third, fourth, I know there was COVID running in there as well, but it's just the first one after so long is always going to be different to any other one. I don't know, Tom, would you agree with that? They're all special, don't get me wrong, but it's just the first one after so long, and when you see the supporters and the scenes and the carry on afterwards, I don't think they can ever be matched.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, whenever anyone asks, like, 2018 does stick out, and it's for those reasons, you know, there was that outpour of emotion, as you say, Donica. And yeah, for that reason, I think it was unreal. You know, it was you don't see people crying in the stand anytime we win an All Ireland, you know, the last few years, whether
I was crying. I was happy.
But yep. 2018, that's what it was. And I remember bumping into my parents and extended family, and, you know, there was nearly a tear in my eye, whether, yeah, you know, there was, yeah, just, yeah, that kind of disbelief.
Yeah. It's disbelief that it can happen to us. Like, it's that feeling. Like, it was Galway the year before. It was in 17. It was, for them, it was breaking of, you know, that was, again, that was 20 something years of hardship, or 30 years of hardship since the 80s.
And I was actually saying after I'll never forget, and I said it to a few people and they agreed with me actually, but, you know,
someone agreed
to me, imagine that happening. standing up in, when Joe Canning hit the last free, right, was it 2 points? That was the level. And I remember thinking, go over or go wide, but don't drop into the back of the net. And all that could go through my mind was 1994, Offaly comeback, 94, 96. And that had, I was 1 and 3 years of age. It was scars, nothing got to do with me, right?
Yes.
But that was the mentality that scars, I had. Yeah. when Joe Canning stood over at last. And when I said, I asked some of the players afterwards, they actually said, oh, do you know what? That came through my mind as well. And I firmly believe if that ball did drop into the back of the net, three of us, I don't think we'd be sitting here now, yeah. I do. I think
but
it was
no,
that
there
big.
Are moments like that, aren't there? Mm-hmm. And like, I know you can put it down to luck, but there is also something that needs to happen. Someone to kind of go, no more. Like, I'll never forget an hour time. It was John Kelly, a brilliant centre and winger with us. But we got there, we were knocking on the door, journeyman for too long, and he was there. It ends today in a team meeting. And I promise you, it was over before we even went on the pitch. I knew we were going to win because someone that you trust and respect and know that he was... And actually, in that game, we played against Barrett's, and he made the first error. And we went behind the post, and never forget it, and everyone's looking at their boots, and he was there. That's me, lads. 100% my fault. I got that wrong. Don't worry. Like, I know what I'm doing on my defensive
rate. What happened again, yeah.
And all of a sudden, it just put everyone at ease. It was like the balls to put your hand up, to own the error. You know what I mean? That wouldn't normally happen. It was kind of blaming it off on someone else.
But it was years of... We can do this, and nobody rates us. But like, it's funny, you touched on it earlier about you know, where does that confidence come from? You only have potential until you do it. And to do it then, like, I remember against Kilkenny, for me it was Kilkenny in 18, and it was Tom scoring the point to put us ahead. To me, that was cathartic. It was like, Kilkenny were always the obstacle. They were always the team that we couldn't get over. And, you know, we had great culture, super dressing room, right? And for me, it was all potential in 18. Like, it was down the line, this is going to be a super team, right? I thought, you know, we're going to make strides here, but it'll be too late for me. But that game against Kilkenny, it was just a well of fellas, like you said, you know, we're not going to be nearlies anymore. We're going to do it. And it took something like that because it was immense. So Tom collected on the 45, our own side of the field, soled it up the field and off his right. He has a right side, would you believe, right? Tom Morrissey can hit off his right. Off his right. And he put it over the bar. And I was like, this is it. I was like, because I'd been on so many teams that had just seen black and amber and said, you know what, we're not good enough. So it just, it, you can have good culture. You can have say, oh, I believe, and we're good enough. But until you do it, you've never done it. And it's amazing, the switch.
Yeah, but Seamus, there's also a balance in a squad as well, and that's what kind of good managers and leaders can do, to have someone young like Tom to come in. Like, in that moment, Tom, you've no fear there. Do you? Like, you're just doing what you do because you know you're around a senior leadership group that back you to the hilt to perform.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, probably there was a young cohort or maybe of us that came in, and we had a bit of success at under 21 and maybe just, didn't really have that fear. Maybe just
used
had
to
that
winning.
Yeah, just had the belief of winning. You know, we had played Kilkenny teams, you know, Cork teams, Tip teams, I suppose, that will be known as the traditional hurling teams when we were growing up. They're the names you'd hear, and usually the counties you see winning Liam McCarthy's. But we were used to not just competing with those teams at underage, maybe beating them as well and winning trophies ourselves. So, yeah, there was never really a fear there once even making that step up to senior that we couldn't win. That was always my mentality. I think Shane, you slagged me, all right, I couldn't say a sentence without the word win in it, I think.
It's lovely though, but, it's great to have it.
Yeah, it was just, that was my philosophy, and the reason why I played was to win. It wasn't really for anything else, obviously enjoyment, but you know, my first and formal focus was that I want to win. Like,
Shane, that's what you're at now at the moment, aren't you? You're probably trying to identify and put the characteristics in place with a young group. You know what I mean? With the group you're involved with now at the moment, so that when they step up to those moments, that's the new norm in Limerick.
Yeah, with the Limerick Miners, yeah. That's it. And like, I suppose I look back on it and, you know, Limerick was very good to me, and a lot of people in Limerick were good to me. And, you know, when the opportunity came, you know, yeah, glad to do it. No idea where we'll end up, but you know, I think what's important is that I won't say in 3 or 4 years' time the Limerick team will be unrecognisable, but it'll definitely be a lot different, right? That's for sure. What we have to try and ensure in Limerick is that we're not going to win an All-Ireland every year, right? But we can't go.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's Seamus.
Looking pretty good.
You know Seamus is well out of it. Exactly.
We'll never lose.
But I think what's important is that we don't go 45 years without winning one. You know, if you were to when John goes or Paul and the manager team go and a number of players retire and move on or whatever, we just can't go 45 years again. So what I suppose and the lads that are with me are just trying to do is just breed a good culture into the 16 and 17 year olds that in 3 or 4 years' time that they have a understand what it takes, or try and show them what it takes and give an understanding, and that they just fall in and try just carry the baton that's going to be handed over. And that's essentially what we're trying to do in Limerick, is just ensure that there is the next train of people coming. And it's very enjoyable.
What is that though? What are the characteristics that John puts in place? What is the point of difference? I just go back to our own group. Like Declan Kidney was honest, and that dripped from him. So it dripped to all of us. Honesty of effort, work rate. It came out in stuff like that. What is it with John and the management team that's different than what's been there before?
What's different? Like,
there's no mold. Like, I think that's the key. Like, there's no mold. There's no you're. I think you can be yourself. I think there's so many different characters in there, and they're allowed to be themselves. And they're allowed to hurl the way they're, and like I would say, Paul Kinnock is very good at that. Hurl the way you hurl within the framework, but the framework isn't a straitjacket. Like I think then when you're looking for characteristics, yeah. Then you're talking about, I definitely saw it, the bond was there because of the honesty in the group. So honesty is key.
Yeah.
Accountability, like you don't ask anybody to do something you're not going to do yourself. But I think it's key from a leadership point of view that guys are able to do themselves. Like, there's no formulaic approach.
Yeah, Seamus, I think it's the greatest thing we're seeing in sport at the moment, that people are allowed to reflect themselves a little bit. Like, I'm not being harsh, but if you walked into our dressing room with that hair back in the day, you know what I mean? There's no way you're going out on the pitch with it.
Our dressing room in 2018, it is. I got a bit of a slating as well.
But that point Seamus is making, that for you to totally feel that all I have to do here is go out and give the best version of me.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I do think it's kind of going back to Irish culture as well. It probably just isn't allowed that you can kind of be something a bit different. You're kind of expected to be something. But and why we probably like the American sports so much, because you actually see they're not just players and athletes. They're entertainers as well, which is, I know that's my pull towards the American sports. But it's just... forget the question, to be honest.
Sorry, hair.
I was making the point, you have stunning hair.
That's all I heard.
Let's look into it in terms of, all the cultural sides of it, lads. Because you mentioned that there one could be seen as enough. That, how do you keep it on? How do you keep day in, day out? And the biggest thing I found is that hunger. In Irish, we don't like to be number one. We don't like to... The underdog is a lovely place for us to sit. But Limerick's a little bit different, isn't it? Especially what they've done over the last while, Shane.
It is, yeah. And I think, like, the underdog is great. But then when you win one, and then I would say that what happened in 2019... Not what happened, but losing the semi-final. And that was definitely a massive, I would say, turning point, even though you were all out ready after winning one. Like, the COVID year was 2020. And then all of a sudden then things just start to build, and then you realise, okay, we're at the top here. And I actually think it's nearly more of a buzz trying to make sure that nobody gets to the top rather than you trying to pass somebody out, if that makes sense. So you talk about the underdog, you're admitting, okay, we may not be as good here, we'll give it everything to try and beat them. Whereas now you're saying we are at the top here and there's no way we're allowing anybody else to surpass us. And I just think that's where they're at now. And I people want to know, like, you go anywhere, especially maybe not so much with the lads that are still, Tom, that's still playing, but like, people want to know, what is Paul Kinnock doing? They want to know what John Kiely is like. They want to know the secret. Like, whereas that was, and I think from a camp viewpoint, I think there's a great buzz in that nobody knows anything.
Yeah.
I think that's the greatest thing ever. Yeah. And that's why I think that you can really strive to keep on being successful, is that, like, if you win one and you win two and then you lose, like, I know Tom might not want to hear this, like, but I think after this year, win or lose, I think next year, of course you want to go six, but when you get to five, if you get to five, five is done. If you don't get to five, you're nearly back to the start. I just think they know there's something there that's building now, and that's why bit by bit, everybody understands the achievement it will be if you do get there. And if you don't get there, then I want to what's left to achieve. It's not so much about, like, the age profile of the group is still quite good, but it's nearly like I always use the terminology of the cars. If you're driving a 2020 car or a 2010 car, it doesn't really matter, because if the 2020 car is on the road for hours upon end every day, but the 2020 is only or the 2010 is only tipping around the place, it'll actually stay going for longer. So it's not the age group of the Limerick team, it's the mileage and the success that they've had. That's why I think that the big achievement is to try to get to that.
But you'd see that from a management point of view, and just talk to me about John and his place in that, in kind of juggling all of it, so that he's looking at the mileage, he's looking at motivation, he's looking at players and the ruthless side of it, lads. So who do you shed?
I think he's in a lucky situation now, where, like, you know, the Munster League that's currently being played, the league that's coming up, like, when you don't know what you have, or when you have to have a look at what's there, you got to play these people in the games to see, understand what's there. John is in a situation now where he knows who will be where and when he has to have them there, if that makes sense. So, like, you know, you're not going to see 15 starters play the league, play the most, like, they just need to be ready for one thing and one thing only. Whereas take the Corks of the world, or the Dublins of the world, or the Tipperaries, who are in the rebuilding phase, if you want to call it, their managers have got to see them players that are going to be playing championship. So, like, while mileage is a big thing, a lot of these lads aren't going to be seeing grass until March, April, and then into the championship.
But they've earned that right in ways.
They've earned the right.
It's a luxury that they've earned, yeah. Because, like, you can't plan with unknown material. Mm. So, like, if you're trying to find a balance of this works here, this doesn't work there, you have to play players in different positions. You have to try things at this time of year. A lot of time, you know, there's a luxury in Limerick now. You're trying to find guys who can compete for positions.
Yeah.
You know the game plan isn't going to change. The style of play isn't going to change. The role of the wing forward isn't going to change. It's just that, have we got talent to challenge the guys who are there?
But with that, and it's got to be very, very important, if Tom knows that he's going to be playing through hell or high water, we're under pressure.
Yeah.
And that's what John has written, that is that you can't just, when I'm saying that he knows what he has and that some lads won't see grass, at no stage can anybody become uncomfortable. And people might listen in and say, but we all know that if Sean Finn is fit, he's going to be playing cornerback, or if Tom is fit. Like, if somebody's not going well, they need to be dropped.
Yeah.
And to have that, you need to have competition. Yeah. So you cannot, it's not as simple as we have our one to maybe 15 or 14 and there's only one up for grabs. If people know that in January, they know they're under pressure. And that, you ask about John, that's what he's very good at.
But that's honesty, isn't it? Like him being able to kind of come to you and say, you're underperforming, and give you the reasons
and he will
to work on. Yeah, exactly. But I've always felt people mightn't see it, but in a sporting environment, you really appreciate that. You appreciate that honest
but
conversation.
I think we've all experienced that, like, as players. Yeah. It's cliche to say that the people playing best get picked. Until you see that in action, you don't, like, it's hard to trust it, because and I've been part of loads of setups where that's just not true. Like, there's guys that'll play one way or the other, and that's not a setup that is set up for success. It's not.
Or when you're being left out, you get sour.
You have to balance the panel from 1 to 30, not to 1-15. Like, yeah.
And that's what probably you have at the moment. It seems like an incredible group to be around, Tom.
Yeah, no, it is. And there is, as Shane said, there is huge competition there. And I think you can see that, just like, it's not just words. You know, we have been hit with injuries, you know, the last few years, like, you know, whether it was Deck last year for the final, it was Keno the year before, and Pete, we missed Sean Finn this year. You know, so the depth of the squad has always been challenged, and we've always had, you know, people who mightn't have been starting but able to step up, and then you need someone to fill their shoes to maybe come on as the impact sub, you know. So, and it's been seamless. Yeah. And the reason it's seamless is because there is genuine competition and very little between the players there.
How do you balance that with being friendly with someone? You know what I mean? Having a brother, but also helping them out to maybe take your shirt. You know, I always found that you've the best environments if you have that. If you've two lads that are quite tight, but they, when it comes to one shirt, they will take their heads clean off each other.
Yeah, there's no real, like, balancing it. It's kind of like what's away from, it's like anything, like, you know, when you go and play club championship against all these lads that you're playing with Limerick with as well, you know. What happens on the pitch is on the pitch, you know. Off it is off it. You can still be great pals off it. But yeah, you have to go hammer and tongs at it. And, you know, it's a case of, you know, let the best man win, I suppose, really. Like, you know, it's up to John and Paul to decide who plays. You know, you both can only go out and try your best.
Tom, you told us how busy your schedule is before, and we've chatted to Lee Chin, JJ before in previous podcasts about it. We were used to a dressing room that might have tradesmen. Has that changed even in your dressing room now? What's the majority of people do within your dressing room?
Yeah, it has changed. You wouldn't see that much tradespeople, I suppose, in an inter-county dressing room. But yeah, I don't know if that's a reflection on the demand specifically that inter-county maybe, I know it has increased, but I don't maybe think that is the reason why you see less tradespeople. I think it's just, I suppose, a sign of the evolving economy Ireland has had over the last 20 years, you know, 10 years as such, you know, with the universities, with, I suppose, the big multinationals that have come in. You know, there's huge opportunity for people now to go to get third level education under their belt, you know, and I suppose maybe industries that weren't there, you know, 20 years ago are there now, whether it be, you know, IT or big pharmaceutical companies. And I think maybe that's possibly a reason you just see less tradespeople, I think, around Ireland in general. And, you know, the knock-on effect is that you're going to see less people then in a dressing room then as well that do a trade.
When it comes to that, though, everyone likes to balance probably maybe exercise or training. Like, you're doing it at the top level, but would you have tips for someone, say, working a trade that is physically active every day? How do you organise yourself? How do you fit in those little, you know, windows?
Yeah, I suppose, as you say, if you're going to be busy and you're going to be, you know, working and trying to be involved in a team, and you want to keep up, whether it's fitness or, you know, just by yourself, or it is part of a team, I think it's important just, I suppose, be organised is the number one thing. I know you were slagging me earlier about my oats in a lunchbox and going around, but, you know, if it does take 15, 20 minutes at the end of the day to, you know, get prepared, or, you know, maybe an hour on a Sunday to food prep and have your lunches and dinners ready, you might be eating a lot of the same things, but you just got to be, so it's make peace with that and be okay with that. At least you know you're getting, you know, healthy food into you. Then the other side of it is just to make sure, I suppose, that you have a bit of a schedule put in place of when you're actually going to exercise. When you say, as you say, you get those windows that, you know, you specifically put aside time to exercise, and that you're disciplined and actually, you know, because we're not motivated every day of the week either, that, you know, when you put away that hour and a half to exercise, and you mightn't be in the mood of it on a Tuesday after work, that you're disciplined and you actually go and do it, because you'll be the better for it.
Would you do that, Tom? Would you sit down, say, Sunday evening and meal prep, and also kind of look at your week and say, okay, this is my windows for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or whatever it is?
Yeah, I suppose we were talking about the support systems that you might have around you as well. You know, Elaine's very good to me in that regard with the meal prep. I do a small bit myself if I'm caught during the week, because she works up in Dublin, but, you know, she's very good to me in that way with the meals. But yeah, regards time management, you know, you do kind of have to be fairly focused. I've done exams the last few years. I've been working inside Ernst & Young and, you know, trying to, I suppose, play with Limerick as well and manage time for friends and Elaine as well. It does take, you have to make sure that you know what you're doing at each time and that you can give whatever you're doing that focus as well. You know I'm working between 9 to 5, and that's, you know, some evenings that's all. I'm not going to have time to do overtime if there's something important. So you need to be focused and efficient during that time. And then it's same with training, that, you know, this is my hour and a half for training. You're fully focused for it and you're giving that your full attention. So yeah, just to be organised and manage your time efficiently that way.
That's how you find that. Seamus, I'll go to you first. But it's funny when you come away from it and you're not fueling like you'd like, or you're maybe not training like you'd like. And then I used to slag that. I couldn't understand why people would whinge about not being fit. And then you realise the vigours of the real world. Yeah, no one knows it better than you. Three kids in the house.
Five kids.
Five. But the twins are on top of three.
He's about to purchase a minibus.
I retired to raise kids. But yeah. You just have to be organised. Like, it's the reality. It's very funny. I was working with the, you know, very much involved with the Players Association, the Gaelic Players Association. There was always surveys every year about say, like, hurlers, footballers, are you good at time management? And, like, it was overwhelming. You're talking about 80, 85%, no, horrible at time management, really, really bad. But then the average population would look at the Tom Chain when we were doing it. How did you manage to do all this? Phenomenal time managers. Like, it's incredible. But for me, Yeah, morning, if I don't get exercise done in the morning, before the whole thing starts, before the whole day starts, it's very hard to get it in. And like, you know, the reality is that my schedule is not my own now anymore. Like, the reality is, and I'm going to be coaching the under 10 Camogie team this year. It's going to be fairly well.
It's going to be a honor ever.
Listen, you know, John Kiley has his bit. I have my bit.
He has to watch his back.
With the Cork on under 10s, and all, when I go back, Jenny's there, how'd you get on? Was there great? I had 7 pairs of laces.
100%. Two lads had a chat in the corner and
someone holding up a worm and everyone stops hurling. You're like, cool, brilliant.
Yeah, so like, that's the organization. If you've got a window to do it, thank God. Like, I was talking to Tom about, I used to struggle to put weight on and keep muscle mass.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, I was saying to Tom, surely no, you're eating to keep it on. He goes, Seamus, I'm trying to lose it. Like, so yeah. You know, it's different for every person, but you know, I still play a bit with the club, thank God, for a bit of social element of it. It's great to still be around.
Incredible, yeah.
18-year-olds, 19-year-olds.
But it is good for your soul to be around that age group, isn't it?
Sure, I was playing minor for Limerick before a couple of lads were born, and they were like, they just cannot comprehend it. And I didn't even, you know, I play up to it. I start throwing in, do you remember that VCR? Remember when we made CDs, and the lads are like, what are CDs? What's it? Just to Tom's point, I love that organization. Like, and as a high performance athlete, it is entirely about that.
Yeah.
You take the steps to prepare yourself for it. But like, then if you want to stay active, like, you know, I love the old adventure races, looking to get into a bit of triathlon, stuff that'll fuel the part of me that craves a bit of competition, exercise, fitness. And you can do all these things, but you know, the knowledge I've gained on nutrition and stuff like that will really help me from my time being.
Yeah, of course,
It's part of.
Shane, anything on top of that? I personally, myself, I always like to have a training partner. I find it good to take away, like Tom's saying there, if I say myself and Shane are going to catch up and we're going to train at this time, I find it handy for helping me to get it done.
The biggest problem I had is fitness and me always throughout all my life was probably the greatest challenge, and the one thing I always had to do to stay fit was run. You know, nothing else really done it for me, and I can't or couldn't run for the last 3 or 4 years, so that does make it a lot more harder. But it's just then diet and just doing whatever I can to try and meet our own first baby boy 5 weeks ago now, so that also brings new element to it as well. But overall, listen, I just have to try find a way, because what I did do before I can't do now, but I'm happy enough where I'm at.
Yeah.
Shane, we'll go to you. An awful lot going on for you now with the punditry and helping out and at home, as you just mentioned. Congratulations, that is great news. It is, being a dad is something special, isn't it? But you're also doing a bit with Cleanness Foundation. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, a national charity based in Limerick. Got to know Brendan and Terry Ring through a good friend of mine, Kevin Downs, who's working for Brendan's business in Cube. They're a charity that you know, give money to families who's got a seriously sick child. It's as simple as that. There are very, very few, if any, charities out there that literally give money to families, just say, look after, get the heat at home, pay for the car parking bills, traveling over and back. It doesn't really, you know, it's not for, they don't cover medical costs or anything like that, where most, you know, other people do. I've called to families, what we used to do before COVID is actually call to houses and give the check to people so that they could put a face behind the check rather than maybe just get a check landed in the front door because they have to apply for it. And I've called to houses where I've walked in, they don't know me from Adam. I'm saying, I'm Shane, I'm from Cleaners. There's a number of volunteers that do it. And I've given people money over a kitchen table to, but their response was bawling crying. They said, Shane, we can't afford to put oil into the tank. I've had to give up my job to cater for our child that's very, very sick. And so, listen, it's a sad, you know, it's a sad charity. You get 400 families every year. Their children get diagnosed with a seriously sick illness. So it's tough, but we enjoy what we do and we work hard at it. And I know there's a lot of families out there that are a great gratitude for the support that we give them.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. What can people do to help or find out more if they'd like to?
All I would say is that they are so, so professional. No matter what you're involved in, you're always going to talk it up, aren't you? It's all the one to me. You know, the only advice I give people is even just check cleaners.ie. It's very, very simple what to do. I know Tom has done work, Seamus has done work. It's just a fantastic organisation.
Amazing group.
It is lovely to have something like that outside your life to make you appreciate stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, no, perspective on everything. Like, looking for All-Ireland's is class. It's brilliant. But when you, Shane, walking into houses and the effect that actually brings us, that's incredible stuff.
That's a beautiful thing about sport as well, though. It kind of, I feel it rounds people off a little bit. There's a compassion to think of others because you do
give
it
back,
to, yeah, to do it day in, day out. Tom, I'll come to you for young players, boys and girls listening in. You know, they'll look at you togging out every time. What advice would you have to younger boys and girls who'd someday love to live your dream out?
Yeah, I suppose one thing I think when you're a kid, you might compare yourself to maybe who's the best and things like that, and it might disincentivize you just to stay practicing or something. I'd say, look, everyone goes at their own pace, so just stay practicing, don't compare, and just focus on just improving yourself. And, you know, I think on improving yourself, the best advice I can give is, you know, make sure you practice the things you're bad at. I think, I know when I look back to when I was a kid, you know, I used to love going, taking frees or striking off my right hand side, or, you know, doing the things because I was good at that. You know, it takes maybe your father or a coach to say, okay, you're good at that, but start striking off your left. And it's just about forcing yourself to maybe practice those skills that you're not good at to make yourself maybe improve and be that maybe all round player.
Yeah. Seamus, what for you?
But that's it. There's so many examples of if you're passionate about something and you stick at it, it's the people who have the desire mentally, you know, to pursue a dream to the end. They're normally the ones who actually have the greatest impact at the end. Like, there's so many examples of like even Aaron Gillan, current hurler of the year, really burst onto it as our squad as a 19-year-old, you know, really broke through all preconceived notions that people had for him later in his, I suppose, rather than being an underage superstar. So there's loads of examples, there's tons of them, of people, Brian Lohan and Clare, like there's tons of them that just, you know, they had a dream, they were passionate about it, they pursued it, and when others fell away, they were there.
Because that happens an awful lot probably nowadays compared to before. There's so much selection process. You're probably dealing with it the whole time. But maybe you don't make it at a younger age. But that isn't a reflection whether you can go out at the end. I think for me it was always, I always forget, remember Munster 20s and I didn't get picked. And I remember all the guys didn't get picked, got the bus bound to Cork and everyone was going to stop and get a few cans. And I remember that was actually a sliding doors moment. It's like, do I head off here and get a few cans with the lads or do I go after it? And I'm glad of that moment that I stuck it out, that I kind of stayed in the fight a little bit. What about for you, Shane? Anything that you'd say to a younger player coming through? Because you're dealing with them now. You're probably seeing all the things they have to put up with.
This is it, yeah. And I've, you know, had to make hard phone calls to parents because you can't contact kids because they're under 18 and tell them that their little Johnny is not going to be selected this year. And my parting message to anyone is that I just would love nothing more than for you to prove me wrong and hope that he can just keep the head down now and come back at another time. And even outside of hurling, to be honest, Dunica, I went down a different road to the majority. I never went to college. I was no good at school. I enjoyed the crack and I just found my own path. And some people are being put under pressure at home. You have to go to college, you have to do that. If that's for you, work away. And if it's not, there's plenty of opportunities out there. I think once you're good mannered and you've a bit of respect, you'll go a long way in life.
Yeah, great advice. Tom, I won't come to you on this, but lads, I'm going to do it to you. 5 in a row, is it on for Limerick?
1,000%.
The only team to stop them, Dunica, is Waterford.
We leave it there for now. Lads, thank you so much. Honestly, really appreciate you taking the time to chat to us today on Under Construction. Limerick do something special. I've been lucky enough to be around the place, but how you reflect your county and where you're from, you should be so, so proud. It's the envy of every other county, and we're so glad to chat to you today. And Tom, we wish you continued success.
Thanks.
Same, lads.
Much.
Best of luck with everything you take on. It was a joy chatting to you.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Welcome back to Under Construction. It is time for our Supplier's Corner, and that means our hero Patrick is back in to bail me out.
How are we doing, everyone? All good?
All great.
All good, great.
Yes. We're delighted in our Supplier's Corner today to chat to Crown Paint and to tell us a little bit about it. We're delighted to be joined by Clark Blair and Ken Kinsler. Lads, thanks so much for joining us.
Delighted.
Thanks for
here.
Having us. Yeah.
Clark, I'll go to you first. You might give us a brief history on Crown Paint. Of course, we all know what we see on the shelf and what we're used to using, but just on the company itself.
Okay. Thanks, Dunica. Just to give you a little bit of a background, Crown Paints has been
protecting Irish homes for the last 100 years almost. It actually started off just around the corner from here in Cardiff Lane, where we had a factory. And over years, the Crown brand has accumulated a number of other brands, such as Sadlin and Santex and McPherson's as well. We're now owned by a company called Hempel. And that that company has one shareholder, which is the Hempel Foundation. It's a global company, so it's quite a large organization. And the unique thing about the way that we operate is that because we've got a foundation, basically everything that we generate in terms of revenue, etc., go back into the Hempel Foundation, and they've got three drivers. And it's really part of our culture and the way that we operate. Those three drivers are to support education in the third world. So by 2030, we are aiming to support over 1 million children in the third world who wouldn't normally get the chance and the opportunity for education. And then the second driver is biodiversity and protecting areas of the planet that are under threat, etc. And the third part is sustainability. Sustainability is in the core attributes of everything that we actually do. Obviously, the whole world is changing, yeah. So we want to be a sustainable leader in our sector, and that's what we're driving towards. For example, by 2025, we will be completely carbon neutral as a company. So that's a real standout.
2025. Wow. It's an amazing goal to have, Ken, especially when it's that close.
Yeah, fantastic. And you know, as we meet suppliers right across the island of Ireland, sustainability is becoming much more important. It's coming very, very, people have obligations to make going forward. And the fact that we use plastic that's recyclable in all our packaging, it's a very good positive story to help our suppliers in terms of what they can trust a supplier that is, you know, covering sustainability goals right across the piece. Hempel drive it and we follow in suit. So every product that we launch across the market, first and foremost, has to be sustainable in a packaging context. And then we work from there in terms of size, formatting and how we launch it into the market.
You must be way ahead of everyone else. 2025, as Dunner says, is just so close. Like it's next year.
It is, it is.
But also the fact that the foundation and everything you make goes into a foundation that actually puts everything back, that puts your DNA as completely sustainable.
Yeah, it's with a lot of pride that we talk about this, you know, because we know it's very unique in the market. I know one or two other foundations, like Carlsberg, for example, is a foundation. We do this in order to support the foundation. We don't use the foundation in order to support our sales, if that makes sense. And that's in our culture. The other piece of it is, yes, there's the global context, but we've just launched another social responsibility program ourselves called Project Possible. And that's getting to the local areas, for example, Ireland, where we're coordinating community work, education. We've sponsored World Skills for, I think it's the fourth decade. So, you know, that has to be very important for us. Obviously, we want the new trades people coming into the business as well. And obviously, charity work that's going along with that Project Possible element of it. So
you probably don't shout it from the rooftops nearly enough, to be honest with you. You know,
sometimes we're our own worst enemy whenever we do that. And as I say, it's not... We do it because it's in our core. We don't do it to sell paint. And I think there's maybe a mismatch.
Yeah. It's so typically Irish. You know what I mean? To be doing really well, leading the way and saying, shh, tell no one about that.
So what's new? What have you got new? And
now we're on a Patrick. Get ahead of the game there.
On a roll. So what we wanted to actually talk about today was a product called Sadlin Superdeck. Okay, so you mentioned about, you know, people understanding what product is the right thing for whatever substrate that they're using. I think Sadlin Superdeck is one of the most unique products that is actually out there, because you can use it everywhere apart from floors. And Donica, I brought in a couple of props with me.
Okay,
that I really want to show off to you.
Yeah.
So Sadlin Superdeck, yes, it is the Sadlin brand name. People know, people trust it. And, you know, we talked about those planters, we talked about fences, et cetera, and even garden rooms, et cetera, that people are using those bolder colors. Our Sadlin Superdeck can be used and all those places, and there's thousands of colours to choose from. Okay, so we believe colour is incredibly personal, and you will have the opportunity to pick the colour that you want exactly. So whenever it comes to saddle and super deck, its incredible durability is second to none. It's about 10 years durability that you would expect it to last, which is excellent. What makes it unique is that it will go on any surface, and it won't flake and it won't crease and it won't peel, etc. Okay, so I just want to demonstrate a couple of things for you. Just to highlight.
Well up for a demonstration.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to throw the ball to him. Glad we're standing beside each other.
I'm glad you brought a green ball.
we had our product trainer do these up for us. So I apologize in advance whenever I show you the other ones.
Yes.
So he said this was a Connacht green.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll go for Ireland green for that one.
It looks really good.
So that's the paint.
So there's two coats on that rugby ball, just to highlight the fact that it'll go on the absolutely any surface, and
a stunning colour for a rugby ball. Now it might get lost on the grass, but that could make for a better game.
Exactly.
But there's no sign of it cracking.
Absolutely.
Which is extraordinary.
It actually looks like the ball.
So is that oil based or water based?
It's a water based. It's water based.
Environmentally friendly as well.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely. Feeding the tea.
It's self priming. You don't need an undercoat with it. You can apply it directly.
No undercoat required.
Ideally, three coats. There's only two coats onto that on the bare product. Okay, or on the bare substrate. If it's been painted before, you're looking 1 to 2 coats. Give you an example. Now, I painted my fence, must be about 4 or 5 years ago, in this lovely blue colour. Sorry, okay. it was a Leinster.
Yeah,
blue.
Yeah. Okay. Come on, no wonder you need to change. Yeah.
So I painted a number of years ago. Now, whatever happened during that particular time, the weather changed, okay? So I managed only to get 1 coat onto it. And of course, whatever happened during the day and the following days, I never got an opportunity to put 2 coats on it or 3 coats onto it. Now, I'm not advising that everybody does it, but just to show the durability and how good the product is, I've had 1 coat on my fence for the last 4 or 5 years and it looks as good as new. So, but another prop for you, you're going to love this one.
Okay, here comes trouble. If this is a pair of red jocks, I'm out the door.
I love it. Okay.
You can probably use a fresh pair at this point.
Those ones are too tight nowadays.
Our product trainer, I told him to do Munster Red.
It's too popular. We've none left, it's sold out.
He was allergic to it.
So just feel how flexible that is. That will not
That's
crack.
Coating
it
on the glove.
On the glove.
Yep.
Wow.
And so you can imagine any type of timber will flex during the winter and the summertime, etc. So it has to have that durability.
That's incredible.
And there's a specialist elastomeric product properties that are put into that. So the product itself will stretch. Now, just to reinforce it, I have a little bit of tin foil here.
No
as
way.
Well. Yeah, a bit of tin foil. So there's 2 coats on this.
Wow,
yeah.
What a product.
And as I mentioned before, we can mix this into any colour under the sun, so we can make sure that the choice.
So it's mixed
colour,
at point of sale.
It is at mixed at point of sale.
There's a small ready mix range, and then there's a full basis range, which allows you any colour. Any colour at all that you like. You can copy a fabric, you can bring in a Munster jersey and get the Munster jersey on it. This exact same colour. It can cover any colour.
Limited market though.
Yeah. That's big down Munster, isn't it?
Exactly. Nothing but red.
Yeah.
But then, for the summer seasons, we split off.
So, I mean, that's a key product that we wanted to highlight today. We've also just launched a product called Wetwood Decking Stain, okay, which obviously living in Ireland, we get the old little bit of rain. This product is designed that if it's been raining, for example, all you need to do is to brush off the excess water and you can stain your decking. And protect it. Normal products, you have to let the timber dry, etc. So that's brand new into the marketplace as well, which is going very well.
But that's it. It's making it simple. I not been harsh, but I tried to paint our kitchen table and made a dog's dinner of it. And if you know, there's one.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Things. No, I'm not covering for my own stupidity, but I'm trying to make an attempt for it.
So you mentioned your support of World Skills earlier. So obviously, you know, we've a massive shortage of skills in this country, and it's an ongoing issue for us. So organizations like World Skills obviously help grow that. They're a non-for-profit organization and very much promote skills across the world. So we've World Skills in Lyon is in September next year. Will we have some Irish painters going down there?
I believe so. But yeah, it is fabulous to be involved in that organization. And yeah, it really is the lifeblood. Obviously, we need the next generation coming through. And it's you could even see it from the World Skills back in September time, you know, and how much energy there is around all those people that were involved in it to try and bring the tradespeople through. Some of the candidates that we had in September, the skill set was superb.
Wow.
Absolutely brilliant, you know, and you can see there's the benchmark and people are getting enthusiastic and getting involved in it. So certainly it's part of something that we want to keep on driving ourselves.
Yeah, so the World Skills competition is held every 2 years. It's a bit like the Olympics of skills. So you get 60, 65 skills all coming together and they all compete across different countries. So we usually put a team of about 20 in as a country. And everything from carpentry to painting to tiling to plumbing, electrical, whatever. So it's a big gig.
Wow.
But it needs a lot of support to get it. So the competition you were referring to earlier was the Irish competition, which was held in the RDS September.
Yeah.
So great to have that. Well done, you guys. Yeah. Ken, Clark, look, fantastic to have you guys in here. The news of your great innovations. Brilliant. No Munster Red still.
Get out of it. I have to thank you. You go back to a childhood memory for me, but I remember having a fight with my mom because I wanted to wear my Liverpool Chrome Paints jersey from my communion, but wasn't allowed to get away with it. It was too far.
Brilliant.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here. Brilliant to be here. Well, thanks a lot. Yeah.